Blog Talk Radio.
Just delightful this past week. What's been happening around Masonry has just, you know, if you can throw a line out into this great big ocean that we're floating around on, it has just the most remarkable things floating around in it. Anyway, good day. Welcome to this episode of Masonic Effects. We're looking more and more at not so much at what's going on, what's not going on. Not so much trapped anymore by the discontentment, but realizing how the benefit of being careful about who we bring into our lodges. When we think about it, it's not to be imprudent. It's more like we're not just adopting somebody into our lodge. I was just about to say it was like family, but it isn't. We don't have the same complexity as family life. But it's people that we bring in that we are going to sit with and rub shoulders with. After they are with us for a while, we begin to experience what they are like truthfully, just like we do with any enduring relationship. Some people, and it's parallel, some men, don't have what it takes to the first adversity, and they leave. Now, that's not on us. That's not on Freemasonry. At least I don't think I've found any evidence of that. But when I look around out into the broader landscape out there, this seems to be happening quite frequently. And I don't think that I'm an anachronism. I certainly struggle not to be. And I have no interest at all in restorative nostalgia. I do not want to recreate the conditions of 1717. Oh, my God, are you crazy? Or 1919, are you out of your mind? No, mine is reflective. I remember the moments that are I cherish from my past and treat them that way. I don't find that I have to cling like a frightened child. Oh my goodness, I don't like what's going on because I've decided I can't process more information because I'm going to just languish in opinion. I'm just going to stop my thinking here, stop my reasoning, and instead I'm going to issue forth with opinions. I haven't succumbed. Thank God I haven't succumbed to that. We have no more opportunity today than we ever did, but it's as if this huge sifting device has meant that the fellows that don't have commitment are leaving. And when I think about we've just had a wedding in the family, and both the families had very, very long, you know, the parents that are, were around, I think, 50 years or more. And the other couple, their son-in-law came into our family, and they've been together longer, a little bit older than us, but longer. But that's sort of commonplace with our groups, I guess. But not so common publicly, is it? You know, out there in North America, there's a lot of people, a lot of children being raised on their own. And there is confusion about roles, but there needed to be. Oh my goodness, yes, it wasn't shattering to anybody with a bit of frontal lobe activity to realize that the amount of aggression and violence that was holding society together had to stop. It was coming to an inevitable end. And I think it was a careful, completely refreshing commentary on the human condition that we're moving toward a greater awareness and greater understanding through whether it's the demagogues trying to put the genie back in the bottle everywhere, or it's the Sufi and the Kabbalist telling us open your mind, open your eyes, think the world is huge and we're a part of these beautiful systems. It doesn't matter. We're moving toward we're weighing it out. It's ugly and it's dirty, it's gritty, but we're moving toward understanding. And we create the laws without ever to say, wouldn't it be interesting if we could create a law and there'd be no more bigotry and no more racism, no more poverty, no more hunger, no more homelessness? Wouldn't that be simple? Well, we don't live it. We're not simple creatures. But we know now we're tinkering with some really interesting, simply beautiful ideas. Universal basic income, well, if we thought about that according to our religious beliefs, we'd be exercising that, helping each other out. It wouldn't be left to, you know, the people in this country. I live in a huge, huge country. It takes me, what will it take me about to get across here? Oh, yeah, if I'm an idiot, I can do it in a week, I guess, but I'm not an idiot. So what do I take, 2 weeks to get across the country? And that's not sneering at anybody's abilities. I'm not on the meter. I don't have to get there. It's just to try and take it all in. A week, a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, a month wouldn't do it justice. But when I'm out west, the boys that I can count on, and it doesn't matter whether I'm a woman, a young man, or an old boy like me. If I'm stuck, somebody in a butt dirty pickup truck is sure as hell going to be pulling up, saying, "Hey, you okay? What are you doing out here?" And giving me a hand. And if it's not one, it'll be two or three. I can guarantee you that. These are the guys that let you cut into the line when the traffic is backed up. The guys that offer some common courtesies. And they don't. It's nice if somebody gives you a little wave in return, but we don't expect it anymore because we've got a lot of new people in this country that don't know the conventions. They don't know that when you're driving and you pass a speed trap, you flick your lights to the oncoming traffic. Hey, cool it. Settle down there, boys. You know, hi. Legally, I'm just saying hi to my brother-in-law. That's all I'm doing. But you know what I mean. And and we look after. You look after. It doesn't have to be. Oh, I don't know that guy, so I'm not going to help him during this flood. You ever been to Winnipeg in the spring? Of course. You ever been? Yeah, of course you're going to help out people. Or you're up at Fort Mac? Well, of course, you know. Don't be ridiculous. And here, and in Quebec, it's like they just, if folks don't like it, they're going to be out showing you. You know, they're going to show you. They're going to be sitting behind the blinds, looking out through a little crack. They're going to be out in the streets, and you know, I don't agree with your thinking, and I don't have to make sense. I don't have to be a spot on. I've got an opinion here, and that's what the politics are. It's accountability. And well, we have our own version of all of that. And you do in your own places to your own nations. You have those experiences where you know that there are people that will be there for you in a pinch. Well, we've added to that group that we've listened and we've heard that women didn't feel safe. So we've had to do something, and we have the disgrace, the utter disgrace, turning out these men in uniform, taking advantage of us, of the trust that we gave to them to perpetrate violence on women. Yeah, that's coming to an end. And the end is that the trust in men has eroded. The trust in the uniform has changed. Nobody's pointing a gun at us saying you have to think any different. You want the trust, earn it. Earn it. The reputation is tarnished. Earn it. And we're not a country of where we've got where we are winning battles. No, there's no big civil wars going on in this country. We settle matters that two official languages, you know, two languages, we're speaking it anyway, make it official, you know, and the atrocities toward the first people here. The atrocities have led to disclosure, and we are going to take us the next at least 100 years to sort out damage that we did. That's environmental damage to our soul, to because of what we did to other people. So the men that are walking away from their wives and children because you know all women are like that, aren't they? It's never anybody that's culpable. It's always, you know, something goes sideways, and you're not smart enough to ask for help. Well, you just dig in your heels and bail. Mm-hmm. Where's it getting you? Yeah. Your happiness is at the cost of what? A lot. Let me tell you, a lot. And it's multi-generational. And yeah, that's just the way life is, isn't it? Well, when we think about those guys, they've been coming into our lodges too. And we haven't really examined for that part of their genetic code. If things get difficult, what will you do? What will you likely do? Cut and run? Or are you going to sit down and try and figure out what the hell's going on and fix it? Or are you stupid enough that you need somebody to sit there preaching at you, telling you what to do and what to think? Is that, you know, I know which kind of guy I want to, I know what kind of guy I want to be. Be in lodge with for any extended period of time. When the dust settles and you're starting to get, you know, the fellas gets over the jitters. That's, you know, the wonderful jitters, the excitement. We're not stupid. So we turn around and look and wonder, where did those guys go? They were just at that initiation a couple of months ago, and we haven't seen the hide nor hair of them since. The question we don't want to, the dirty little secret. Well, they didn't really go anywhere. You know, there was something wrong with them. You know, It's nothing to do with us. Well, yeah, that old refrain ain't working anymore. Isn't working anymore. And then that's not to mention that that we're dealing with broken hearts, broken expectations, and unfortunately, it's crowded out this quiet narrative that's been taking place for a long, long time. A friend spoke to me the other day about how long our militaristic influence, interpretations are going to be prevalent in Masonry in this jurisdiction. And I'd like to think there will always be aspects of that, always. Because the military may have, that military command and control is no advantage right now. Quite the contrary, it's been a considerable disadvantage. But it's daunting to think about replacing that with an enlightened conversation. Think about it. You and I walk into the pub. We see our mates sitting there at the appointed time, and we go through our cleansing. We establish the atmosphere. We render a sense of importance to our transactions, and then we're going to have a spontaneous outbreak of enlightened conversation. Are you on crack? Are you, have you lost your, really? I want to go and visit your pub if that's what's happening. You've been to the places where the round the tables, remember the draft at 15 cents a glass? Where you'd have the chemistry department hunkered down over there, and sometimes the geography department would wander in, making all of their outrageously wonderful claims, and the philosophy department everywhere, all over the place, and mingling with the mathematicians. Phenomenal conversations. So we have that happening. Now think about if you want that, where do you have to go to experience it? Well, you try and disguise yourself as a 20-something or 30-something-year-old and get yourself a student card at a major university. The classroom is part of the learning experience, but we also learn through the social aspects, because that's where our conversation is disarmed, where you begin, not because somebody is making, you're going to gain points from anybody, but you start to refine your thinking by putting it out there. And you can ask the question without fear. It's not like you're going to be beer judged. You're not going to be judged by the clear minded. I remember as if it was yesterday. I asking this guy doing a PhD in Fred, doing a PhD in philosophy. Talking to a friend of ours doing his PhD in mathematics, Barleycorn, a nickname, and hearing the fusion of philosophy and mathematics firsthand. The fusion, and it was me making conjecture about some philosophical notion of mathematics or vice versa, and having these guys immediately pick it up. And yes, that's an education you don't forget quite easily. Masonry, we don't have that, but we have that kind of experience in our heads. We know that's where we'd like to be. If you're inclined, we'd like to have that, I feel good when I'm in a in a beautiful atmosphere. You put everybody in a regiment of decorum. We have some rules of good taste that follow us into our banquet room. But put me into a stark church basement. Why would I do that? The likes of me, I'm expecting to be admitted to a gentleman's club. And I can take off my work boots and loafers just the same as anybody else at the door. And we have those expectations, and we want to see them realized. Small steps, but it's not the small step we take for ourselves. No. It's the awareness of others. And I began to think, if we're going to practice, if we're going to improve masonry, it's not me trying to carve out my niche, my sense of masonry in the world. It's me making an effort to preserve yours, your comfort level, your transaction with ritual, or if not, then just fill the hall and it's a club, more like a darts club than masonry. Don't ask learned questions and expect a lot of sniggering if somebody does errantly ask why. I have to in some way preserve that, make that comfortable for the different versions of masonry. And by doing that, I express, I think, some element of understanding about myself as a Mason. I, as you know, long ago, I'm a rationalist, so for me, authority has to make sense, and respect has to make sense, and merit, it wasn't you, it's not up to you. I have that sense of merit and work very hard to in my own mind, yeah. And then as you become a little more seasoned, as you know, you become a little quieter and quite comfortable studying and pursuing. And now being asked to guide and to assist and support other Masons, it's coming with a forced opportunity. We didn't ask for these circumstances, to be honest, but by golly, we're making the best of it. And right now we have to thin out the woods. There's a bit of dead wood in there, and nobody likes the sound of chainsaws in an old forest. I want to protect the old growth stuff. Yeah. And I want to listen more. I have to listen more to people that feel that there's a spirit in the rivers and the spirit in the trees. And yeah, it's healthier, better for me and for mankind. Now, masonry is shedding. The boys that need to cut and run are leaving. But they've been doing that with marriages and their kids for a long time. I didn't invent that. Do I understand it? Yeah. Do I condone it? No. No. Do I think that it has something to do with narcissism and selfish? Yeah, but is it understandable? Well, I don't mean that somebody should be stuck putting up with tolerating aggression, or being gaslighted, or the violence. No. But they aren't waving a flag when they come trying to solicit membership with us. And I'm saying, it's interesting, isn't it? It's an interesting bloody phenomenon. But it's one of those questions Masons daren't ask. We shouldn't ask. I'm going to put on a little bit of music here for us and get into this. Bonds and shackles. You know, bonds, things that bring together, and shackles, things that keep us together. Shout out first to the audience, and thank you, man. This has been really quite amazing. To listeners from Spain and Britain and the United States of America, and Australia and Iran and Germany and Canada and Netherlands and Turkey. What can you imagine would bring listeners from those countries together? Sit back, enjoy. Get your cappuccino going, or your Merlot, or what are we having here? Malbec, or a single malt, if that's your fancy. Or if you're like me, a nice bubbly glass of spring water. Michelle Petrucciani will help us with get into the show. Sit back. That's from a show he did in Stuttgart back in 2010. It's too bad he's not with us anymore. What a talent. Michele Petrucciani. Lots of talent in the world. We're fortunate. We're fortunate when that we sometimes when we're working very hard, we can actually, you might have done it yourself, sort of had that moment where you need to take a deep breath and put things in perspective, especially if you're in one of those positions where you've got a lot of things coming at you all at once, and it's just necessary. And that's part of the joy of it. That's part of the fun of it. It's that it's just such a ride, just have to keep up with it. You have your own scenarios in mind, I'm sure. This is what inspired me to the inspiration for this commentary today, Bonds and Shackles. And I was reading at the time a little more about Pythagoras, and I'm going to be a good follower, but the Rosen Cavalier does not work for me anymore. Just putting on the uniform doesn't work. That doesn't mean that somebody has accomplished anything. It is what it is, and nothing more. So I'm following I'm following Pythagoras. Excuse me, move over, move your bloody ego over. Somebody told you I'm supposed to. Well, earn it. You want my respect? Earn it. Eh? I'll give it, but earn it. Deserve it. Pythagoras speaks on this, bonds and shackles, from his place in our history. All bonds without friendship are shackles. Yep, he said it. We know that there's been an effort to sort of rid the world, erase the effect of Pythagoras. And we don't know who necessarily, but we have some ideas, but we see the results. Now, let's just qualify that. What does it take to want to erase this kind of a thinker? And I'm asking you something totally unfair, I know. One quote, and use that quote to define the entire character of the guy. Forget the college, forget the mathematics, forget the sacred math, forget that. All bonds without friendship are shackles. If we thought and functioned as a single structure, I doubt we would struggle with such things as tensions. But I don't know how they'd be inescapable. In an ideal world, friendly men would be just that, friendly. No conflict, no friction. How embarrassing and practical. This is a prescription for subservience. We are by far beautifully complex, and within that complexity, tensions occur naturally. And we, being proudly individual, carry on expressing opinions that are partials without ever expressing the idea in its fullness. We leak opinion. It doesn't have to have a thought ahead of it. Just stop me and I'll dispense opinion. We dispense opinion. When we pick up partials and treat them as wholes, partial ideas, that is mischievous of us. The mischief fades quickly when we observe and begin understanding. Trouble yourself if you choose, but it is illusion, not reality, that triggered your emotion. I know what lies behind the magician's curtain, but I still like the sleight of hand, sawing the lady in half, making rabbits disappear. What would a friend do? He would think kindly of his brother, disagreeing with a smiling voice is gentle and influential. Ritual helps us by bringing to our attention an expectation that we do not act rashly. Yeah, we know what the magician has done, but you don't sit there revealing it to a group of children while you're watching the magic. Although I've seen that and you've heard that done. How droll. Ritual brings that to our attention. Don't act rash. We will be in control of our emotions. Control your emotions. What, man? What are you talking about? Yet it respects the need for each man to discover on his own the mechanics. Oh, yeah, that's just don't be rash at Graham and control your emotion. Now, the mechanics of that. Here we go. Bike riding again. We can't do it for you. You're going to have to figure that out. But don't give up. Be willing. Dad can hold onto your bicycle seat running alongside only so long. At the moment he lets go, you and I learn by discovering how inertia works. The hand is off the seat, brethren. What are you discovering? Too many of us know better what we should do to protect the harmony of a lodge. Just like in relationships, there's times when we have to make very, very painful decisions in order to preserve our sanity. The hand is off the seat, brethren. What are you discovering? Too many of us know better what we should do to protect the harmony of a lodge. Too many hold back. Friends would protect harmony with reminders, with examples, and with fair-minded judgment. To execute masonry fully, we need the cooperation of each member. He needs to bring his talents and a willingness to adapt. Part of the gig. His effort is to routinely employ temperance. Without it, music is discordant. You know, the timing, a good idea. Excuse me, will fail when simply offered at the wrong time. You may hit the perfect note, but if it's out of sequence with the rest of the musicians, it's lost. Of course, we need to be able to create these environments where somebody's jamming information at you all the time. Well, you know, even 8-year-olds have figured out how to deal with that. You just nod and tune out. Children do it. Oh, and the proudful parents that try and use violence to get the child's attention. Therapist offices are full of them. Yep. Doesn't work. What works is communication, eh? Observation. You wait for jamming information at somebody is a sure way to put them off learning. It's a sure way. Trying to create guilt. That's been done where I am. That's been done for a long, long time. It was like you were somehow bad if you weren't doing something. Well, that's all you got? That's all they had. I'm sorry. But then COVID comes along and washes all the dust off. And we're in this deluge. And here we are in this antediluvian state of mind, looking around. And what do we find? We find the beauty of these. You didn't need to do that. You didn't need to posture and carry on and prance around like a peacock. No, these ideas are enormously beautiful. And if you follow them through to the extension, we would have music at every break, every moment. Hell with Pythagoras and Mozart. It's just the joy, isn't it? Here's You want joy? Here's Horace Silver. He's doing a rendition of Lonely Woman. You'll see what I mean. Now that is an interesting commentary, Graham. Yeah, we should sit down with your listeners and think that one through again, buddy.
Thank you.
Interesting guy, this Horace Silver. A lot of, I find myself pulling material off his album Song for My Father, you know, the Horace Silver Quintet. Really, really interesting musician. Brings to mind the poetry today. The work today is a little, it's by a transcendentalist, a poet, Ralph Waldo Emerson. We like to go by Waldo, so we'll refer to him as that. Interesting guy. You probably have heard the name. I'm going to talk about his poem today, titled Fate. Deep in the man sits fast his fate. This is an interesting fellow for a couple of points. He was an American essayist. You know, media has sort of dissected this, and essayists and lecturers and philosophers. He's like the Jordan Peterson kind of a character, an abolitionist and poet who led what's called the transcendentalist movement in the mid-19th century. That's a philosophical movement that developed late in the 1820s and 1830s, and its core belief is the inherent goodness of people and nature. And while society and its institutions corrupted the purity of the individual, people are at their best when truly self-reliant and independent. Transcendentalists saw a divine experience inherent in the everyday. Rather than believing in a distant heaven, transcendentalists saw physical and spiritual phenomena as part of a dynamic process rather than discrete entities. So a transcendentalist emphasizes subjective intuition over objective empiricism. This was a reaction to protest against the general state of intellectualism and spirituality. We see this going on in Masonry as well. It's not like, oh my goodness, you know, the torches and pitchforks. This is a protest about ways of thinking. It's not the way of thinking, it's the limits to them that take us so far. So before we tip into the work of Immanuel Kant and all that German idealism and Swedenborg and Boehm, we're going to try and tie this one off with in a poem, Fate. Now in this, this poet is describing the nature of fate and how he thinks of it. You think of it yourself. Is it now? Of course, anybody that has any sense of decorum about him is going to try and have at least a bit of an understanding of quanta theory, or if you're like my dear friend John, you'll want to chew off a piece of string theory and have at that. Oh, it's fabulous. A person has to have in this human qualities that make one a human being. Well, that seems like a topic worth a dram or two. I think it's year round. Nobody remembers a person who lives for selfishness, selfish needs. It would be great, but it was all about being selfish, me. We're seeing that collision right now going on in North America. Really, really interesting time. People remember the person who has stood courageously while facing the odds and didn't merely live for some self-centered purpose. It's like that bloody guy that lives quietly. Do you know the man who lives quietly and lives within his own means? That keeps coming back on visiting us, doesn't it? The poet likes the person who cares more about humanity without thinking much about himself. It's a stereotypical kind of way of thinking, but isn't it just amazing when, if you give it a bit of thought, this is just the framework for for fate. A beautiful poem on the nature of fate, how fate favors a person in comparison to others who are born with a blight. And according to this poet, fame is the beauty of the rose. It's a melody that's born of melody. No matter how hard a man labors or an artist creates a specimen of art, it can never encompass the deeds of one whom fate adores. Fate adores, eh? So we can plan and plan and plan and plan and plan. And every moment of every day, the laws of probability are active, aren't they? It's amazing. Deep in the mind sits fast his fate, to mold his fortunes, mean or great. Unknown to Cromwell as to me was Cromwell's measure or degree. Unknown to him as to his horse, if he than his groom be better or worse. He works and plots, fights in rude affairs with squires, lords, kings. His craft compares. Till late he learned, through doubt and fear, broad England harbored not his peer. Obeying time, the last to own the genius from its cloudy throne, for the prevision is allied unto the thing so signified. Or say the foresight that awaits is the same genius that creates. Thank you. what an interesting experiment, the Modern Jazz Quartet. That's Milt Jackson being featured in this. Interesting, man. Interesting concept. Still with us. Still. But beautiful music. And I'm so, every so often, like now, I'm reminded this is the music that should never exist. It's the music of the black man. Listen to it. It's so innovative, you know, so spontaneous. Accusations. I don't know what the world would be like if we didn't have accusations or contentions. I don't know. I need you to send me the writer of science fiction that deals with it, what the world would be like, and think it through. We're dealing in the history with in Amsterdam in the Netherlands, with a period when the Calvinists were particularly strong, and they're making some claims about this upstart, this process of secrecy surrounding Freemasons, and making some interesting speculation all on their own. They were attacking us for the lifestyle that was being brought. It was because the lifestyle wasn't consistent with the old school values, you know, who's who and the homage and the ranking. It was different. It was a mixture. So this was it was becoming problematic. Masonic rhetoric was, because it required thought to strike the right balance between body and soul, between reason and passion. What the hell is that? We have religion to do that for us. One of the accusations against the Masons is nothing less than they have formed a conspiracy of a party. Yeah, you know, a political party. They've threatened, in doing that, they've threatened civil unity. Consonant with their treason, they are atheists, naturalists, indifferentists, and guilty of one other ism, too dangerous and too embarrassing to be named by the Freemasons in their defense, and thus simply left as Istin. Given what we know about Rousset de Messie, lifelong dedication to pantheism, could it be that? You know, pantheism. The pantheists see the universe is conceived as a whole is God. Everything, that's God. And conversely, that there is no God but the combined substance and forces and laws that are manifested in the existing universe. That's pantheism. And I admit readily, it makes sense to me. It makes sense that this is how I experience God as a deist. We'll get into that some other time, eh? But give that what we do know is either that these anonymous detractors who were taking wild swipes at Freemasons assigned the Amsterdam Freemasons to the camp of the free thinkers, or that the Freemasons themselves, in mentioning these particular forms of free thought, recognized the intellectual lineage of the ethical posture that have been accused of affecting more sympathetic witnesses to the reputation of the fraternity in the Republic tells us it was believed that this philosophical company, as the same time religious, held to a purified deism. There it comes again. There are two most remarkable references to historical personages given the time, place, and language made by these Amsterdam Freemasons as they attempt to ward off their detractors. In their defense, they deny that they are denizens of the back rooms inhabited by the detractors of the Bible. The party was concerned then, as it is now, that it's a front, a pastiche for backroom mechanics that that play out, that put their self-interest at play. They said that they were declaring they weren't inhabited by detractors of the Bible. This is when it wasn't an irreligious group. And they're not the followers of Matthew Tyndale or Alberto Redicetti, the Petzera, both notorious free thinkers of the early 18th century. We can't have any of that. Oh, no, no. No free thinking going on here. And yet we have a manuscript French translation of his book, Redicati de Pissarano, his book on Christianity. Christianity is as old as creation. And it circulated. The copy is to be found among the private papers of a close friend of Rousset de Massy, the journalist and encyclopedist Prosper Marchand. The second name disavowed belonged to a radical Italian nobleman who died in The Hague. In this Masonic defense, we've discovered two extraordinary references, names presumably known to both defenders and detractors. In the 1690s in London, Tyndale was a denizen of Tolan's radical Whig culture, and Tolan later acquired something of a pan-European reputation as the infamous and deistical author who sought to reduce Christianity to the shape and form of a natural religion. Some of his deistic writing had been published in Dutch. How much was known about Tyndale's connections with the more famous or infamous Tolan, we don't know. Radicati was an Italian naturalist and materialist in matters religious. So you see how the lines were drawn, and what would influence you and I in the day. We're just walking around minding our own business, trying to buy a leg of mutton or a goose for supper. What would we be thinking about these, you know, those Masons? That's all politics, and you shouldn't trust them because it's all a secret, and we know where that goes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I see that the witching hour is upon us, and our time is drawing to a conclusion for this week. I don't know about you, but I found this a little, you know, piecing together the ideas of coming together as friends. It seems so simple, so self-evident. Just treat everybody with a friendly attitude. It's like your VIG to sit at this table. Friendly attitude. And when we see that it is not there, it's not a condemnation of masonry. It's somebody exposing themselves to us. And what we do, well, we can joyfully, I like the idea of a penalty for harsh language, or you know, if you're being intemperate or disrespectful, may sentence you to pay a fee. So if that's $10 for every time you have your little temper display, I think that could grow the coffers of the lodge quite nicely, and the good spirits. But those are things that we'll see happening as we come back into lodges, probably closer to 2023 than we're getting there. We're getting closer all the time. Thank you for sitting in with us wherever you are in the world. It's been an absolute pleasure, and it's fun. I thought Emerson, I don't know. I'd like to do more thinking about that. You know, I don't know how popular his poetry will be with me. Transcendentalism, you know, reality to some kind of spirituality, that'd be okay. I can follow that along. Let's see where that goes. And here, we just had a skirmish with deists and pantheism. And it's not anywhere near conclusive, because you'll simply have your own versions. And if we've brought this to mind in a good way, or you're curious, you want to explore a bit more, fine. If not, that fine. The work of us, it doesn't stop. It pauses. We catch our breath, and then do we convince ourselves that we want a life of conviction? And then, oh my goodness, that's fraught. Conviction, living according to conviction, living, trying to piece together this ideal that we aspire to. Me, knowing that it's important for me to demonstrate, it's not for me to receive it, it's for me to demonstrate that, to see the merit in the behavior and manner of the people around me. It's always harder when you have to pony up, isn't it? Anyway, thank you for sitting in. I hope you'll join us again on Masonic Effects and commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. Be careful with each other and take care. Thank you.